few years ago, I met someone who I don't think I've ever met anyone with a greater passion for songs and songwriting and what makes the songwriters tick and how they put the music together. A lady called Debbie Kruger, who actually used to write in the APRA magazine.
I worked for APRA.
Yeah, that's right. You used to write in the magazine each month, or I think every few months, a story would come out and you'd write the story behind the song. And it was such a terrific idea. I remember I talked to you about it at the time, and that would have been some years ago, because you've spent the last 4 years putting together a fantastic book called Songwriters Speak, as they've told the tales of some of these amazing songs that we grew up with. It's a huge, huge exercise, isn't it?
It's a huge book.
It's a huge book, and you've told the story behind some of these wonderful songs.
Well, the songwriters tell the stories. And that's the point of this book. They're actually question-answer style interviews. I wanted them to be conversations. I wanted you to hear the songwriter's voice rather than me just telling the story. So I ask questions, the songwriter gives the answer. It's about asking the right question to get a good answer.
And you asked a lot of questions about a lot of songs. Was there one that really knocked your socks off, one that really surprised you, that stood out for you?
A story in particular? Well, I do love the story about Age of Reason, and it wasn't so much that the story of writing the song surprised me, although it was quite personal. Todd Hunter and Joanna Piggott wrote it specifically for John Farnham in the hope that he would sing it, but it was actually inspired by the birth of their first son. They're a married couple, and Joanna found that the lyrics poured out after she'd had her child. But the story that really surprised me and literally made my spine tingle, I was sitting in their studio, and Todd said, look, I'll play you the original demo. And it was actually, he'd gotten his brother Mark Hunter, the late Mark Hunter from Dragon, to sing on that demo.
Let's just hear, first of all, this is the John Farnham Age of Reason. This is the song we're talking about, which was a massive hit. Now, you've got the original demo of this. Tell us that story.
Well, yeah, I was sitting in their studio and we'd done the interview, and then Todd said, look, I'll play you a demo of, you know, our original demo that we made of Age of Reason. This is the one we sent to Farnham, you know, to see if he'd record it. And we got Mark to sing it, and Mark, you know, wasn't that comfortable in the range, so they actually had to get another vocalist in to do the third verse, because Mark, who was difficult at the best of times, actually said, oh, you know, sod this, I'm not singing the rest of it.
Yeah.
But when they played it for me, and I heard this voice from the grave.
Mark Hunter,
an incredible man in his own right,
from
great songwriter in his own right, singing the original Age of Reason, the first time it was ever sung.
Yeah, let's have a listen to this now.
What about the world?
Interesting about that is that the original version and the recorded version aren't actually that different, other than the lead vocal. When Farnham's producer, Ross Fraser, decided, yes, we'll record this, he didn't actually change the arrangement very much. There are other songs that when you hear the demo, there's an incredible change between that and the final version. And one is Glenn Shorrock, when he wrote Help Is On Its Way, it wasn't Help Is On Its Way. It was actually called Hang On.
Yeah, we all know Help Is On Its Way.
Now,
this is the original demo, and this is Glenn Shorrock singing this.
Yes, and he wrote this in 1970, so 5 years before Little River Band. And it's actually a different song, but you'll recognise the chorus.
So listen now.
So what happened was Glenn actually had another song, which he can't even find the original recording of now, and he combined that other song with Hang On, and turned that into Help Is On Its Way. And that's a great example of the creative process over a period of a few years. When he got together with Graham Goble and Bee Birtles and formed Little River Band and realised the great voices he had, he could tailor some of his songs around that. And so we talked about that in the interview.
Okay. Now, some of the other examples, I guess we could just have a listen to this one, for instance. This is one of Paul Kelly's great songs, which I really love. Great song, that one. Now, I guess with so many songs, you'd say, well, who was she? Who was her?
The story about To Her Door is actually about the bloke who's singing it. And Paul said to me in the interview that that character actually kept popping up in other songs. He'd sort of write a song about a guy having a hard time in a relationship or in life. And he realised after about the third time that it was the same guy. And I said to him, well, you know, give him a break.
The other thing I liked, and it comes up in a few of the stories here, is that songwriters sometimes wrote lyrics to fit the music in some of the songs, and later on they thought, oh, I could have cleaned that up or changed it a bit, but of course it's become part of the song, hasn't it?
It wasn't so much to fit the music, because often the music and the and the lyrics tended to arrive together during that creative process. But certainly, you know, like any of us that create anything, we'll look back and go, oh, I could have written that better, I could have said that better. And there are some songwriters who've written a line here or there and they think,
I think Brian Cadd said that.
Nick Cave said that. Brian Cadd said it in particular about Little Ray of Sunshine, because I pointed out that there was a line in there that had always bothered me, which is, I think that I'd rather her hair was much darker.
Yes.
And I said, in this glorious tribute to this child, why did you put that in? And he said, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I wish I could take
it out.
Just
put it in there, that's right. But of course you can't now. And that song, which has been played so often about, you know, the birth of little girls, people assume it's about his own daughter. But in fact, as you say in the book, it was about some friends who were having a horrific relationship who'd had a little girl, and it was about them.
That it
this
was
beautiful
about them.
Thing had come in the middle of this toxic relationship. And you also say in the book that they don't know it's about them. And the girl, who'd now be in her 30s, she could be listening right now.
That's right.
Is not aware that that song was written about her.
Brian was a little uncomfortable about sharing that story with me, but that was part of the joy of this book is that I
did. He knows
did.
Who they are, but no one else does.
Well,
maybe the couple
maybe
does.
A few of their friends around that time or in that circle recognised it. But there are a number of cases of people in the book who wrote songs about people and didn't really want to talk about it but found themselves telling me those stories.
Yeah. One of the great stories that I like is this one, which goes back to, it's about Normie Rowe, isn't it? This song here with Johnny Young wrote.
Written by Johnny Young. Great
Young
song.
Talent Time fan.
Well, before
and
Young...
sung by Ronnie Burns, who's Lauren Burns' dad, so there's connections everywhere, isn't there?
Before Young Talent Time, Johnny Young was a pop songwriter.
Yeah. And this is an anti-war song.
He wrote The Real Thing and then he wrote Smiley.
Now it says there, of course, you're off to the Asian War. People like me listened to that on the radio at the time. I didn't even recognise what the words were and what it was all about.
Well, Johnny Young was very moved by the fact that that he wrote the song about Normie. And, again, never told Normie at the time that it was about him.
Yeah. And the song became a huge hit, but no one really examined what it was really about at the time. It was just a top 40 song that was there.
That's right.
Now, what about Richard Clapton? We know, of course, Girls on the Avenue, which was about a group of women, I think, that lived down the road from them, around the
That's
corner
right.
at Rays Bay.
Everyone assumed it was about sex workers, street women.
Yeah, hookers.
But in fact, he wrote it while he was living in an apartment in Rose Bay, and he used to look out his window and see these lovely, stylish women just walking to the local shops.
And they were the girls
they
on the avenue.
Girls on, because the street in Rose Bay was the avenue,
the
Rose
avenue.
Bay.
And so he wrote the song, but then he discovered that he was a hero to all the sex workers
all the
and prostitutes who were coming backstage after the show saying, thank you for writing that song.
That's right.
Now, what about this one? I love this song, Deep Water, which is just such a great song.
Yeah, that's an interesting story and a long story that Richard tells. It was partly written about a scene that he was involved in around Bondi Beach, and then it shifts to an episode that happened, a true episode that happened at Palm Beach, where he was very hungover one morning and he was driving with his girlfriend and their car broke down and they were having this big fight about having to call the NRMA. And he said, you know, we were on Palm Beach Road, I'm so drunk the car won't go. And he just wrote down these thoughts, these observations. added it to the song.
Out came the song. Now, what about this one here? If you leave me, can I come too? Which is, you know, such a great lyrics, aren't they?
It's my favourite song title.
There.
Well, there's no great story behind that one. Martin Plaza wrote that for Mendel as Anything, and he loved the line, you know, if you leave me, can I come too? And no one had committed it to song yet, so he thought, well, he'd better do it in that typical Mendel sort of quirky style. And it's great, both Martin Plaza and Greedy Smith deny that there's a quirkiness to Mendel as Anything songs, but of course there is. It just flowed wonderfully. But there was no great epic story behind that particular song. It was more a lyric that he just thought needed to be committed to music.
Yeah. Debbie, look, we've only really scratched the surface here. It's such a big book. Like, I've opened it up here and there's your chapter on Neil Finn, who's one of the truly great songwriters of all time, surely.
He is. He is. And somebody who's not as conscious about the creative process as we would like to think that he is. A lot of it just flows, and he's not quite sure how he did it until he looks back on it. His brother, Tim Finn, also an amazing interview in the book, and far more conscious of that creative process, and spoke very eloquently about the creative process.
How many people do you think will read this and find that the songs that they assume were about something completely different are actually about something they never even dreamed of?
Well, 100,000, hopefully. But yeah. There's some of that. And then there are people who will read it and go, oh, I thought that's what that was about. Some of the songwriters, like Brian Cadd, who you mentioned before, were quite reticent to share these stories because they didn't want to shatter anyone's illusions. Part of the thing about songwriting is that once a song is written and recorded, it's out there, and they're happy. The songwriters are happy for the listener to put their own meaning and interpretation on the song. And so sometimes they're hesitant to explain what was behind it because they don't want to disappoint people.
Because in that excellent ABC series recently, Love Is In The Air, that they did, they had a few songwriters admitting that, you know, some of their songs, the words didn't mean a lot at all that they'd put together. And it amuses them over the years to hear people try to interpret what they'd written.
Well, that's certainly the case with Neil Finn, who doesn't, you know, someone like Nick Cave is very conscious of what he's writing lyrically. Someone like Neil Finn just lets the lyrics flow, whether they make sense or not, and then puts them together in a way that we think makes perfect sense, but he didn't necessarily mean anything by them.
Yep. Well, Debbie, look, congratulations. It's not just the book, but you've also got a CD there with the music.
Double CD.
And some of the stories as well associated, so it'll do very well. I've got a few mates who'll be very, very excited by all of this, and it might even start a few arguments.
Thank you,
so
John.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks
in.
Thanks for having me.
It's just called Songwriters Speak, Conversations About Creating Music. Debbie Kruger, there's something in there that you'll be able to identify no matter what your age, I think.